And we're holding on static tests on the bays about the middle of the middle size lines. We learned yesterday that Shmuel had said that if a shochet, a tabach uma, an expert shochet, messed up and caused the animal to become nevela, then we said he's chayev to pay, he's a mazik, he's a poshe. And we ended up saying that that was according to the mayor. And we showed that a mayor holds that that when a person is a pesheya, when he's not careful enough to prevent the nezek happening through what he did, then he's called a pesheya, and therefore the same thing over here where he shechted and messed up the shechita. So now talking further about this din, tabach uman shekilkol, an expert shechet who messed up and caused the animal to become nevela, chayev, then he's going to be chayev to pay, even if he's as expert as the shechtim of Tzipori, who were known to be very careful with their shechita. So you would think, therefore, basically it amounts to a 100% oinus. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yechon is saying that they're chayiv to pay. So the Gemara asks, so, Omer Rabbi Yechon and Hachi, did Rabbi Yechon really say that? The same Rabbi Babachana says in a story that happened involving Rabbi Yechanan, Uvda Hava Kameid Rabbi Yechanan Beknishta de Moin. There was a case that was brought before Rabbi Yechanan in the shul of Moin, which is a city in Eretz Yisrael. So there was exactly that, where somebody had been shechting, in this case, as we're going to see, it was, he had shechted chickens, and there was a problem with the shechita, and it turned out to be nevela, and the owner of the chickens is saying that he should have to pay, and Rabbi Yechanan tells the shechet, zil icy raya demamchis the town of Golem, go bring proof that you are an expert as far as chickens, the efteroch, and then I will declare your potter. So we see that even though, we see that when he's an expert, then it's enough that we see that it's enough that he's an expert, and then he's potter. Various Rishonim and Achronim discuss the question: why should he have to bring the proof? On the contrary, Hamotzi Machaver Lavaraya. So there's a lot of discussion. There was a lot of discussion back and forth about different angles on that. One point Rabbi Chanan Wasserman makes in Kovetz Shiurim is, now we discussed a little bit yesterday, when you have a case like this where a craftsman does something wrong and the result is that that's wound, how do we look at it? Do we look that he's an Odom Hamazik, or do we look that it's something else, that he's a Shoim? So Tosfos holds that he wouldn't be chayev as an Odom HaMazik, because then if he was, then we would say Odom Mu'ad La'olam. But even so, Tosfos says that no, when it's a complete oinus like that, then you can't call him an Odom HaMazik. And therefore, Tosfos learns essentially that he would be a shomer, and as the Gemara is going to go and discuss the difference of whether he's a shomer chinam and a shomer socher. So now the Ramban similarly holds that it's more a matter of he's a shomer. So therefore, now in general, with a shomer, as we know from this past week's parasha, when a shomer does something wrong, then he's the one who has to swear that when something happened to the thing, then he himself is then he is going to have to swear of what happened. So therefore, in the same way over here, we would say that he has to swear, or in this case, to be exact, what it is he has to bring a proof that he is in fact a mumcha, that he's an expert, and therefore he would be potter from paying in that case. But otherwise, he would have to show it. And there's a lot of discussion why indeed. The Ravid brings a point. We find based on a Gemara in Bava Metzia that where a person is able to bring a raya, then we don't have him swear. Instead, we tell him bring a raya. So the Ravid says the same way over here. Since he's able to prove that he's a mumcha, that he's an expert, then therefore that's what he should do rather than swearing. And then you have the different Achronim talk about it. The Prima Godim talks about, for example, like this, we have a Roiv, we have a concept called Roiv Mumchen, Roiv Mitzurin Eitzel Shchita Mumchen Hein. Most people who are involved with Shechting are in fact Mumchim, but on the other hand, And the fact is, here we see that he didn't shecht properly. Obviously, therefore, this is not part of the roiv, because after all, roiv of the animals or birds that he shecht are going to be kosher. This one is obviously not part of the roiv, so therefore, the Prima Gadim talks about that might be a reason why he has to actually demonstrate that he's a mumcha. And there's a good deal more discussion about that. So the question is, anyway, Rabbi Yochanan said that a mumcha has to pay, that even the greatest mumcha, even if he's an expert as the ones from Tzipori, has to pay. On the other hand, here Rabbi Yochanan is saying that if you can show that you're a mumcha, then you're potter. And the answer is, like kasha, kan b'chinam, kan b'schar. It depends whether he's doing it for free or whether he's doing it for pay. When he's doing it for free, then in effect, he's like a shomachinam. When he's getting paid, then he's more like a shomer sacher. Now it's true, it's an onus. Either way, it's an onus. But nevertheless, the fact is that here, since his job is to shecht it, then therefore he has to actually do the shechita properly. And if not, then we can be mechayev him. So therefore, the case when Rabbi Yochanan said that he's chayev to pay is going to be where he's being paid for it. The case in Moin where Rabbi Yochanan said if you can prove that you're a mumcha, you're potter, would be where he's doing it for free. And in fact, the Gemara says, "Ki hoda amar Rav Zeira." This is exactly like what Rav Zeira says. Haroitza she is chayev like tabach. If a person wants that, he's giving an animal to a bird to a sheikh at the shech, and he wants to make sure that the person is in fact going to end up paying him if he wounds the shechita. Yakdim loy dinner. He should go and prepay him a dinner, and that way the guy will be a shomer sacher, and that way he will be chayev in case he messes up the shechita. There is a discussion on the question: do we mean that he actually has to give him the dinner, or is it enough that he made up with him that he's going to pay him the dinner? The Shittim Kobetzis brings a point because maybe the vort is, after all, the shochet is not necessarily doing any other kind of kinyan on the animal. So you give him the money, or you promise him the money in advance. So therefore, in effect, you're making him your hired worker, and therefore that would make him chayav. So we see, therefore, so that's what Rabbi Yochanan means, that would be the case where he's chayav, whereas if he's doing it for free, then he's potter. So the Gemara says, Maisvi, I have a contradiction though. A Braisa says, if a person brings wheat to a miller, now one thing, when you're grinding wheat into flour, the wheat has on it several layers of shells, and it also has in it, there's the wheat germ and whatever. What you're supposed to do in order to make it easier to separate those various parts so that afterwards you can get clean white flour is you're supposed to do a process called lasisa, which means soaking them in water, and that softens these various shells and things, and that makes them easier to separate. When it comes to wheat for matzah, obviously they don't do that. Technically, the Gemara talks about in Pesachim, in theory, you would be allowed to do it, but in practice, in later generations, they said definitely not, because it's very difficult to make sure that it doesn't become chametz. So when it comes to wheat for matzah, they use a different process, but whatever. The normal way of doing things is to do this lasisa. So in this case, he brought wheat to a miller to grind for him. The loy lost his son. So the miller did not first do the lasisa. He didn't soak him in water first. The result was vasan subinai mursan. So the result is he made it into whole wheat or pumpernickel or whatever bread. So he didn't take out the bran and the wheat germ and whatever the way he was supposed to. Or kemach l'nachtoim. Similarly, a person brings flour to a baker to bake bread for him. V'asoy pasni pulin, and he ended up making for him crumbly bread. Or behema l'tabach. He brought an animal to a sheikh at the shecht, the nibla, and the sheikh ended up making the animal nevela. Chayev. In all those cases, he's chayev neshu kenoise sacher, because he's getting paid for it. Now, the point is, we're not saying that he's actually getting paid. The Braisa is saying that it's like he's getting paid. And that would mean, not like the Gemara was answering Rabbi Yochanan, and like Rabbi Zeira is saying that once you pay him, then the halacha is different. It sounds like even though you're not paying him, the very fact that you're giving him this job to do is considered that he should be chayav. And the Gemara answers, Ema, you have to say correctly in the Braisa, Mipnei Shehu Noisei Sacher. Not that he's like a Noisei Sacher, but that he is a Noisei Sacher. He is, in fact, getting paid for what he's doing. And therefore, that would be when he's chayev, but otherwise, in fact, he would be putter. The Teras Chaim points out, you know, usually when the Gemara is changing the wording of a braisa, it uses the expression toni, learn instead, that it's supposed to be in Bnei Shul Kenoisa Sachar. Here it's just saying, Ema, rather you should explain the braisa as saying Bnei Shul Kenoisa Sachar. So it's a different lushin. So he says, in other words, because he says that these particular kinds of things, after all, the Teras Chaim points out, the Gemara could have simply said any kind of uman. You bring any kind of thing to an uman to do something, and he messes it up, then you're going to have to, then the uman is going to have to pay, as long as he was paid. And instead of using that expression, instead the expression was that because he is a noisy socher, the Gemara is correcting it because he's like a noisy socher. So why mention Davka these three particular cases? So the Teras Chaim says that's the point. In other words, even if these particular ones are usually such people are paid, and usually in fact they're paid out of the actual malacha that they're doing. You give the miller grain to grind for you. Usually he keeps some of the flour as his payment. The same thing with the baker, and the same thing with the shochet. Usually, they themselves, the payment is actually out of what they do themselves, and therefore that's considered to be that they're considered like a shoma sachar. So there's no contradiction on how we explain Rabbi Yochanan and what Rabbi Zeira is saying, because in fact there is taka a difference between whether they're being paid or not, or as the Teras Chaim says, whether these ones are usually paid, where the fact is, after all, in all these cases, they are also getting paid out of what they made, they just end up with an inferior product. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to talk more. So now let's talk more about another case involving Shchita. And for this one, we need a little bit of background. You have five things that pass a shchita, and one of them is called mugremes. One of them is called hagroma, and the animal to which that was done is called mugremes. The hagroma basically means tilting. So what it means is you're shechting through the neck of the animal or the bird. You're supposed to be cutting in basically a straight line. So now you have mugremes would involve where you're leaving where you're cutting on an angle, and you end up cutting in a different place than you were supposed to. Now here Rashi explains that the vort is that you have like this: the windpipe of an animal or a person, for that matter, is made up of a series of rings of cartilage. That each between one ring and the next, you have a ring of flesh. If you feel the front of your throat, you can actually feel the. Yeah, because the windpipe is towards the front, you can actually feel the rings of cartilage and the spaces between them, which are just regular muscle. So now over here, Rashi learns then that it's supposed to be when you start shechting in one of those particular rings, you have to finish the cutting through. You have to go and end up. That you have to end off in that same ring as well, and if not, then you have a machloikas Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim whether the shchita is kosher or not. That's how Rashi learns over here. In Chulin, actually, which is the main place where the Gemara discusses this concept, then Rashi over there brings this explanation, but rejects it actually and gives a different explanation that rather mugremes would specifically be there's a certain area of the neck in which you can shecht no higher and no lower. Too higher, and you're basically in the you're basically in the mouth of the animal rather than in the neck. And too low, then you're basically in the lungs or whatever rather than in the neck. So you have a certain. So Rashi learns in Chulin rather that what it is you have a certain region of the neck within which you can shecht. And hagroma would be where you start shechting within that area, and then you tilt and go outside of it too high or too low, and that would be hagroma. And so you have a machlokas, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, and the Chachamim. Either way, however you learn it, whether you learn it like Rashi does over here, that we're talking about staying within the same ring, or whether we're talking about in the way Rashi says in Chulin, where he says we're talking about the top ring over there, you have to stay within it. So Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda will say, as long as most of the cutting was done in the proper area, it doesn't matter if a little bit was outside the proper area. And the Chachamim are going to disagree. So now the Gemara is going to tell a case that involved this. There was a case of hagroma that was brought before Rav, such a case. So again, according to Rashi over here, it would mean he started shechting, going into one wing, and then he tilted the knife, and started shechting in a on an angle, and it ended up in another ring or in one of the rings of muscle between the rings of cartilage. Now, according to the way Rashi says it in Chulin, the vote would be that he started in the top ring, which is the highest place where you can shech, and then the end of the cut ended up being outside, ended up being beyond that ring in the area which would be possible for shechita. So, Taufe, so Rav declared the animal to be treif, in accordance with the opinion of the Chachamim, opatre l'tabach m'l'shalomi dami, and he patred the shechet from paying for it, even though he had done wrong. So pogube Rav Kahana v'Rav Asi ba'ahu gavra. Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, who were talmidim of Rav, met up with this guy who the animal belonged to, Omrulay, and they told him, Ovid bach Rav Tauti, you should know that Rav did for you two things which seem to be contradictory. So the Gemara asks, my Tauti, what do they mean by that? Do they mean to tell him that Rav was machmir on you in two ways that contradict each other? Meaning, they're saying, number one, by rights, Rav should have declared the animal kosher following Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda's opinion, rather than following the Chachamim and saying that it's treif. And the Tau for Kirabanan, instead he followed the Chachamim and said that it's treif. And the Inami Kirabanan, and furthermore, if he was going to paskin like the Chachamim and saying that it's treif, the Boile Chiyuva L'Tamcha, then by rights he should have said that the Shechet is Chayev, because after all he did a wrong Shechet, so it should be like what we talked about before, that if he made the animal Nevela, then he's Chayev. So you're going to say that. The problem with that is, how could they say such a thing? How are they allowed to say such a thing to a baldin to say that you should know that that the Rav Paskin wrongly against you? Vahotanya, we learn in a brisa. When a dayan goes out of Bastin, lo yoimer ani mezaka v'chaveri mechayven, he should not say to the baldin, look, you know what, I would have declared you innocent, I would have exonerated you, it's only my chaverim, the other dayanim, who were mechayev you. What do you want me to do? After all, they outnumbered me. And the Torah says, as we just learned in this parasha, Achri Rab Latis, you're not allowed to say that. The Pasuk says about such a person that a person who goes around telling tales, like, is a person who's revealing secrets, meaning that as far as the one who was judged and based in is concerned, he, as far as he knows, it has to be that he remains with the knowledge that it was a unanimous decision and not the specifics of which Dayan paskin against him, because for a number of reasons, it's going to cause people to have a lack of respect for based in. It means, in other words, he may now hold it personally against the Dayon or Dayonim who ruled against him, and then he's going to take it out on them in the future. So whatever the case, in fact, the Gemara tells over there in Sanhedrin about there was once a case, there was a Din Torah, and 22 years later, somebody went and told one of the Balei Dinim who had paskin for him and who had paskin against him, and they threw that Talmud out of the Beis Medrash, and they announced that he's a Megalos Soid. So even though it was 22 years later, even though it was a long time later, so the same way over here, how can Rav Kahana and Rav Asi go to this guy and say, look, you should know that Rav paskin against you in a self-contradictory way? You can't do that. That's going to make the guy be upset at Rav, and you can't do that. Ella, no, just the opposite. They meant Tauti Lamal Yusa. What they meant is they're telling him two things for the good. They're telling him that Rav paskin in your benefit in two ways. The one is Deloy Achocha Sofik Isura. He didn't cause you to eat a Sofik Isur, because after all, you do have because Rav has a Sofik, whether the Halacha is like Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda, that such a Shchita is kosher, or whether like the Chachamim that it's not. So he did you a favor by preventing you from eating something which is a Sofik Isur. And in fact, Tosfos points out, so now again, we had two different explanations in Rashi, here versus in Chulin, what exactly the case was. Here Rashi explained that it meant he started shechting in one ring, and he should have continued in that ring, and instead he ended up shechting into a different ring. Whereas in Chulin, Rashi rather understands that it means that he started shechting in the top ring, directly below the highest area where you're allowed to shecht, and then he inclined the knife outside of that, and ended up finishing the shechita out of that. Tosfos actually mentions a point over here that it might mean Now, Rav himself paskins like Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda when it comes to that top ring, but the Tosfos learns that actually the situation was this guy who owned the animal was an Amah Oretz, and Rav didn't want that he should then think that the same thing would be true as far as other rings, and it would be kosher. So that's why Rav is saying that I'm going to paskin like Rav, that I'm going to paskin like the Chachamim, not that technically the halacha couldn't be like Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, but because it was such a situation with an Amah Oretz, then Rav didn't want that the person is going to inappropriately go and think the same thing is fine in other cases where in fact it wouldn't. So therefore, that's what he's telling him. So that's what they're telling him. Rav prevented you from eating something which would be a Sofik Isur, and Umenachem is Sofik Zela. Furthermore, Rav also prevented you from a suffix of Zela, because if you were to collect from this shochet, where after all we're saying that this shochet is you're saying that this is that we're not sure whether it was treif or not, the result is you might be taking money from the shochet inappropriately. So therefore, Rav did you a favor by preventing you from suffix Zela. That Tosfos points out in continuation of what they're saying. If in fact it was kosher, then it wouldn't be suffix zela, it would be vadek zela to take something away from the shochet. He did a perfectly good job. The reason is it's called a suffix zela because he should have realized, Tosfos says, that because he's shechting for an Amah Oretz and it's a corner case like this, Rav might be machmir on him. Then Tosfos brings another explanation that it was in fact in one of the other rings, like Rashi's saying over here, and Rav is saying that he's not sure whether the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, where it comes to the other rings in the neck or not. Okay. Anyway, so therefore, Rav Kahana and Rav Asi are not saying something against Rav to this guy, Fakir. They're telling him a positive thing that you should know that Rav saved you from two potentially suring.
Okay, so the simon which says down on the is referring to the words.
What?
It says well, here, simon.
We haven't gotten there yet. Oh, we're on Tzadik Tes on the base. We're holding now at the end of the middle size lines. So now the Gemara says, okay, let's talk about another case involving experts. Itmar hamara dinner l'shulchani. If a person shows a coin to a money changer, he wants to know. Somebody wants to offer him this coin to buy something of his. And you can't be sure always. The coin could be counterfeit. The coin could be underweight. The coin could be, for example, we learned the other day about the concept of psalatri malchus, where the government decided that this coin is no longer legal tender for whatever reason. You can't use it. They don't allow you to use it anymore. Whatever the case, there could be any number of reasons. They could say that this particular mintage of coins, for example, you could have, let's say it had a picture of a king on it, where now this king has been overthrown and they don't care, whatever. Anyway, the point is, so people would go to money changers, and one of the services that you would go to a money changer for is to check whether a coin is valid. So, hamara dinu l'shochani. So, if you do that, I mean, you know, a modern equivalent would be, let's say, somebody wants to offer you a $20 bill to buy something, and you want to know whether it's a genuine $20 bill or not. So, you go to somebody, you want to find out whether it's counterfeit. Nowadays, whatever, yeah. Anyway, so. Hamara dinner the shochani. So a person does that. He shows a coin to a shochani, the nimtza ra, and it turns out now the shochani told him that it's a good, that's a good coin, and it turned out to be bad. And now there's a problem because let's say, for example, the person who gave you the coin is no longer available, so you can't go and get reimbursed from him. Or let's say, for example, he's a tough kind of guy where you're not going to be able to get back anything from him. So Tony Choda. Uman Potter, Hedyet Chayev, one Braisa says that if the Shochani is an expert, then he's Potter, and if he's a regular person who's not so expert in coins, then he's Chayev, because it would be careless of him to do that. But the Tanya Idach, Bain Uman, Bain Hedyet Chayev, another Braisa says that either way he's going to be Chayev. So how do we reconcile the two Braises? Omra Popper, Kitanya, Uman Potter, Kagain Danku V'Isur. You want to know what kind of person. What kind of expert the Braisa is talking about, said the first Braisa, saying that their potter would be, for example, Danku and Isser, who were very, very expert money changers. They were expert. They were the experts in their field. In that time, they were the ones you brought them pretty much any kind of coin. They would be able to tell you right away whether it's a good coin or not. They were familiar with all the different coins out there. And therefore, so it's funny, by the way, the word Danka with a kuf is the Gemara is actually a coin. It's a coin mentioned in some places. places in the Gemara. The word Isor without the Vav is also a coin that's mentioned in places in the Gemara. So maybe these people were known as Danku and Isor, like the coin guys, maybe. Maybe those were their names. Maybe they were actually known by those names, as like they were named after the coins that they always handled. Anyway, so those kinds of experts, Deloitte Strichula Migma Klau, such people don't need to learn anything more. They know everything there is to know about their job. So those are the kind. If you show the coin to them, and they get it wrong, then they would be potter. Now the Gemara is going to ask if they're such experts, how they get it wrong in the first place. We'll get to that in a second. But anyway, the point is, because by them it would be a total onus, because there's really nothing more that you can expect them to know. Now the Rambam actually holds that if you're paying them for their service, they're still going to be chayev. And the Magid Mishnah points out over there, this is the same thing we had just before as far as the Shochet, that we said that if you're paying the Shochet or the miller or whatever, then they're chayav, the same way over here. That Amram says it would be the same kind of thing over here. With that said, though, the Rashba disagrees and says that in this case, the Uman is going to be potter the same way, because after all, what you could have is, the difference is, a Shchita, you have to have, your hands have to be steady. You could have, even the greatest Baki could sometimes mess up. And therefore, it's not considered a total onus. When it comes to looking at coins, once you're a Danku or Isser kind of person, you know these things. You need to be an expert, so you can't really have, except with the one exception that the Gemara is going to point out over here, you're not really going to have a mistake, and therefore the Rashba learns that even if they're being paid, they would be potter. Well, the Gemara asks, Elab Amai Toh, well, if they're such experts, if they're such world-class experts, then what did they make a mistake in the first place? And the answer is Tob Siksa Choda. They made him, the mistake would be that there's a new kind of coin being minted and they're not familiar enough with it yet. Siksa literally means a peg. The Shittim Kubetzis brings in those days. How did he bring from one of the Gaonim? How did they used to mint coins in those days? So they would have basically a peg-like thing with the die to stamp out the coin at one end of it. You'd have two such things, and then you hammer them together, basically, with the metal blank between them to make the image on the coin. So therefore, a new coin is called Siksachoda, which literally, in a new die, in other words. But it means a new type of mintage of coins, a new design of coins. Dahi Shaita, Nofik Mitose Siksa, it just now has started coming out from the mint, and therefore they're not familiar enough with it yet. And therefore, that's how you could have that they made a mistake. But other than that, there's no other way that we could expect that they make a mistake, because it's true, they would be familiar. They would be familiar with all the different kinds of coins that are out there. And actually, the Chidush Harim points out, I mean, you could say in that case, then what are they doing looking at it? Shouldn't they tell them, well, this is a new coin, I'm not familiar enough with it? The fact is, they're the greatest experts. So what are they supposed to do? If they can't refer you to a greater expert, because there is no greater expert. So therefore, they have no choice but to look at it. And in that case, we're saying that would be considered an oinus. But if they're lesser people who still have those various kinds of coins that they're not familiar with, then they should say, look, we're not the great experts. Go to the greater experts and see if they know.
They probably knew every single time there was a new coin.
No, they knew where there's a new, but they're not familiar enough with it yet to be able to distinguish it from counterfeits. Good. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
How would they know? Is there...
Because eventually you can tell. Experts have ways of telling whether something is genuine or not. So the Gemara tells a story. There was a woman who showed a dinar coin to Rav Chiya, because Rav Chiya, is a type of coin.
Oh.
Yeah. So this woman, again, same kind of idea. Somebody wanted to buy something for her, and he offered her this dinar in payment. So she had gone over to Rav Chiya worked as a money changer, and she wanted his opinion whether the coin is genuine or not. He says it's a good coin. So she accepted the coin in payment. The next day she came back with a complaint. She tells him, I showed it to somebody else. They told me it's a bad coin. So now I can't spend it. So like this, in other words, she's saying, Ruvain came and bought something from me and offered this coin, and then I went to you for your opinion, etc. Now that I took this coin, now I went to Shimon the storekeeper and I offered it to him to buy, but I wanted to buy something, and he said, no good, this coin is fake. So I've lost out, in other words. In short, she's saying, you told me this is a good coin, and I should accept it for my merchandise, and in the end, now it turns out it's a bad coin.
Why did she not go to Dita and...
Because they weren't available. She went to Rav Chiya, who was the expert at that time. So Rav Chiya says to Rav, now Rav was Rav Chiya's nephew, and he was also He managed, he was Reb Chiya's nephew, his double nephew, actually, both, yeah, his double nephew, because Reb Chiya was a half-brother to one side of the family and a half-brother to the other side of the family, and the Gemara talks about it himself. Anyway, the point is, Rav also handled Reb Chiya's business accounts. So Reb Chiya was the money changer, but Rav handled the accounts for him, keeping the books and things like that. So Reb Chiya says to Rav, Zil Chalfe Niala, go exchange it for her for a good coin, that now she can go and spend. Uksayba pinkosi den esek bish, and write down in my account books that I lost the dinner on a bad business deal. Because in other words, I shouldn't have given my opinion on this one. So the Gemara asked him, "My shna danku veisu de patiri." Well, what did we say before? Danku and isu would be potter. They don't need to know anything more. They know everything there is to know about coins. Rab Chiya nami lav l'migma kaboy. Rab Chiya also doesn't need to know, which means that Rashba says one of two things. Either the Gemara knew that Rab Chiya is an expert of the caliber of Danku and Issu when it comes to coins, or the Gemara is assuming if he wasn't, then he wouldn't have offered his opinion on this coin in the first place.
So that's the question.
So Danku and Issu should be potter. He's also potter. Rab Chiya nami lav l'migma kaboy. The answer is, it's true. Rab Chiya is the great expert, and if he hadn't been such an expert, he wouldn't have given his opinion in the first place. But Rab Chiya, l'fnim mishuras hadin, hu da'avad, Rab Chiya wanted to go, l'fnim mishuras hadin. It's true. Technically, he could have told the woman, I'm like Danku and Isser. I'm not obligated to pay. And according to the Rambam, we would have to say he wasn't paid for his service either. But nevertheless, he wants to go, l'fnim mishuras hadin, and to pay her regardless. As we see, the importance of l'fnim mishuras hadin, k'ditoni Rab Yosef, as Rab Yosef teaches a braisa. Now we have, when Yisro is advising Moshe to appoint judges, he tells him, you should inform them of the way in which they should go and the deeds that they should do. So now the Gemara is going to darshan this pasuk, with this half a pasuk, phrase by phrase, and explain that it refers to various ways in which a Yid should act. So when it says you should inform them, zeb beis chayehem, this refers to the house of their life. Now, Rashi over here explains that means Talmud Torah, means learning Torah. And in that case, base means to have a house, means to have a yeshiva for learning Torah. In Bav Metzia, actually, Rashi explains differently that it means that Chayim means their life. Right. So over here, Rashi explains that it means learning Torah in Bav Metzia. This Gemara is also brought in, this Gemara is also in Eilat Metzias. And Rashi over there learns that it means that you should teach them the importance of having a way to earn a living. In fact, Pnei Yeshua says the two of them kind of go together. After all, like it says in Pirkei Avos, Yofa Talmud Torah, Im Derech Eretz. So you need both. You need a base Torah. You need a place to learn Torah. But in addition, you also need base Chayehem in the sense of you have to inform them. Yisrael is telling Moshe, you have to inform them of the importance of that a father needs to teach his son a method of parnasa, and this way you have both. This way you're able to learn Torah because you have a means of parnasa. So it comes out, in other words, so Rashi's explanation here and the one in Bav Metzia kind of complement each other. That's how the Pnei Yeshua explains it. He says, actually, rather what it is Beis Chayim, of course, primarily refers to the Torah. How can Beis Chayim refer to just making a living, which is only Chayesha? So the Pnei Yeshua explains, of course, Beis Chayim means Torah, but it's called Torah Sheni Manderach Eretz, and so forth, so it means that. Anyway, Es HaDerech, the Pasuk continues, Yisrael says, you should teach them the way. That means Zug Milas Chasadim, that refers to doing Milas Chasadim. HaDerech means the way, which is the way of Hashem. And we know, as the Gemara tells us, Holech B'Derachav, you have to follow in the ways of Hashem. Yelchu Zu Bikur Cholim, when the Pasuk continues, that they should go, that refers to Bikur Cholim. Now, why do we have to single out Bikur Cholim? Rashi points out, Bikur Cholim itself is part of Milas Chasadim. The Gemara there in Bav Metzia explains that it's talking about Ben Giloy. You have a person who, the Gemara tells us over there, the Gemara also tells us in the Darim, that when a Ben Giloy, a person who was born under the same mazel as the sick person, visits him, then that causes that he takes away 1/60th of the illness and it comes to him. So Mela, when it's Milas Chasadim, where you yourself are not losing out, of course you have to. But here, where you yourself are getting 1/60th of the illness, maybe you don't need to, and nevertheless, the Pasuk is stressing that you need to. because it's still something that's the right says Yochu. Marsha points out over there in Bava Metzia, the word Yochu suggests a mitzvah that you can accomplish only by going. You don't need to do anything else. Bikocholim, just the fact that you go there is already a mitzvah. Then the pasuk continues with the word ba in it, zukvura, that refers to assisting in burying a person. So again, now that's part of Milas Chasadim. Rashi explains, based on the Gemara in Bava Metzia, that it means even when the guy is, even when you are a zokin ve'en alafi kvoida, even where you're an elder Talmud Chacham, and it's not the covedict for you to be involved in burying a less important person, nevertheless, the pasuk is stressing that you still need to do that. The reason why it's hinted at with ba, Marsha explains, because ba suggests something where you have, there's the mitzvah itself, and you're not expecting any kind of reward for it or anything, which like this, Gvuras HaMes is that, the person himself is never going to be able to pay you back. That's why we call it Chesed Shalemes, and therefore it's hinted at with the word over here, ba, in it, suggesting that it's a mitzvah purely for its own sake, purely the Shem Shemayim. Then it continues, Es HaMaseh Zeh HaDin, when it says Es HaMaseh means judging means following the dinim of the Torah, means following the dinim mominus and all that. And Asher Yasun, when it says that they should do Zulafnim Mishras Adin, that means in addition you have to go Lafnim Mishras Adin. So therefore, Sarab Chia in the story is following that and acting Lafnim Mishras Adin. So in other words, Marsha explains over there, the vortis says Amasa means the actual din, because you have to follow that. Asher Yasun, that they should do, meaning the Dayan, the base din, can't force you to do it, but you yourselves, the Bala din, should know to act the Finim Mashuras Adin. Tosfos, by the way, points out over here that you have a different Gemara that instead uses a different expression for that, Laman Telach B'derach Tovin. And so Tosfos starts bringing distinctions that maybe Lefnim Meshuras Adin would only apply things where other people are chayiv. You yourself are technically potter. Like here, if Reb Chiya was not such an expert money changer, he would actually be chayiv to pay this woman. Like this, he's an expert, so technically he's potter, but he's acting Lefnim Meshuras Adin. As opposed to the Gemara that Tosfos refers to over there later on in Bava Metzia, is talking about a case where everybody would be chayiv equal. Then Tosfos says that's not the distinction. The distinction is the case in Bava Metzia, where was a case over there where Rabbi Bar Rav Huna had actually suffered a great loss. The story in the Gemara is over there that Tupi had hired two people to carry a barrel of wine for him from point A to point B, and they broke it. So he suffered a huge loss. So therefore, we can't call it Lefnim Meshuras Adin to go and pay them for their work, as the Gemara tells the story over there. But we can call it that Rav told him Laman Telach B'derech Tovim. Still, you should go even beyond Lefnim Meshuras Adin. So it comes out from what Tosfos is saying over here, according to the second answer, there's you have the din itself, then you have the Lefnim Meshuras Adin, and then you have even beyond Lefnim Meshuras Adin. So yeah. Okay, so anyway, the point is that Reb Chiya is acting Lefnim Meshuras Adin, and that's why he wanted to give this woman back her money. Okay, another case. A dinner was a coin, whatever it was worth. A dinner is equal to a zuz. We often find that the Gemara mentions that four zuzim would be the amount that a laborer, that a hired worker might earn for one day. So you figure out then one dinner would be a quarter of that. So I don't know, in modern terms it might be I don't know, $20 or $30. I don't know, whatever. It was enough for it to be a concern for her. Okay. The Gemara says another story involving money changing. Resh Lakish achve le dinner le Rabbi Lazar. Resh Lakish had a similar situation. Somebody offered him a dinner coin as payment, so he went to Rabbi Lazar to have Rabbi Lazar check whether it's a good coin. Omer Malyahu, and Rabbi Lazar says it's a good coin. Omer Le, so Resh Lakish tells him Chazi da Allah kasamchin. Be aware that I am depending on you, and therefore now what does he mean by that? That's what we have to figure out. So he's saying, be aware that I'm relying on you. Now actually, so you have different opinions among the Rishonim. Like this, when we talked before about Danku and Isser, would we say, even if you're relying on them, would they be chayev? And the Mukha Yosef says that no, because the fact is, again, it's an onus. There's nothing more that they need to know. And then Tosfos, on the other hand, discusses over here. Tosfos says that it, apparently in this case, yeah, Rabbi Lazar was not such a great expert yet. He wasn't an expert on the level of Danku, Issur, or Rabbi Chiya. So therefore, so he's telling them, so he's saying, so Tosfos learns that actually, no, even if he hadn't told him, even if he hadn't told him that I'm relying on you, then he would still be chayev in case it turns out to be bad. On the other hand, Tosfos brings from the Rif, who says that no, he's only chayev if you actually tell him I'm soimach on you. So different opinions on that. Anyway, so Rabbi Elazar asks, what are you mentioning that for? What are you meaning to imply by that? You're implying that if it turns out to be a bad coin, then I'm gonna have to replace it for you, like in the story with Rabbi Chiya. Why should that be? Aren't you the Shlokish, the one who said that Reb Meir is the one who says that a person is chayev for dina de garmi, which is an indirect hezek, as we'll discuss in a second what dina de garmi is. And this would be an example of that. It's not that I was, even if it turns out it was a bad coin, after all, I'm not directly mazik you. I told you it's a good coin, and then it turned out to be wrong. That wouldn't be a direct hezek, that would be an indirect hezek. And only the mayor, you're saying, so holds that such a thing, a person is chayev. My lavra mayor veloy sviral on kavasei. Now, when you're saying that the mayor holds that way, doesn't that mean only the mayor holds that way, and we don't hold like him mahalacha? So therefore, in that case, regardless of whether you're relying on me or not, either way, it would be dina de garmi, and I should be potter. So what's the point of you mentioning that you're relying on me? Amalei, so Rosh Lakish says, Loi, no, actually what I mean is, Rameo Sviralan Kavasei. What I mean is, Rameo says this, and we do in fact hold like him that a person is chayev for dinner to gami. Now, we talked about the other day.
But we said
about Rabbi Chiya was saying that because he was a great expert, that's what Tosfos is making the point. Tosfos is making the point that Rabbi Elazar still has what to learn about coins. Rabbi Chiya did not. We talked about the other day. With the Gemara always says that groma, a person is potter for, and he was saying Rameo holds that dinu de garmi yuchayev, and Rav Shlokish is saying we even hold like him mahalacha. So what is the difference between groma and garmi? We talked about the other day a number of opinions of Rishonim on the subject. The Ramban, by the way, wrote an entire kuntras on the subject. The Ramban first made his great name in the Torah world by writing a kuntras called Kuntras Dina de Garmi, where he goes and analyzes this whole point and all the opinions of the Rishonim before him in great detail, and that's what first made him famous in the Torah world. But what is the actual difference? So many Mefoshim explain that Rashi and the Rambam hold that there's no difference between Groma and Garmi. Rather, the Gemara, when they're both the same thing, the Gemara is just saying there are different opinions on the subject. Whenever the Gemara says that you're potter for Groma, that's according to one opinion. And whenever the Gemara says you're chayiv for Garmi, is according to the other opinion, the opinion of a mayor. There are, in fact, Achronim who learn. I think the Shach talks about this, that maybe in fact Rashi would make some kind of distinction, and maybe the Rambam would make some kind of distinction, but based on the shitchiistic loshon of theirs, based on the surface loshon of theirs, it seems there's no actual distinction according to them, and it's just a matter of different opinions. On the other hand, most Rishonim do understand that there is a difference between Groma and Garmi, and they talk about what exactly the difference is. There's an opinion of the Ritzbah, one of the middle Rishonim, one of the Balei HaTosfos, who holds that the difference is that when it's a more common kind of damage that a person might do, then the Gemara calls it garmi. When it's less common, then the Gemara calls it grum. So again, then it wouldn't be so much a difference in halacha, but well, it would be a difference in halacha, one you chayiv, one you potter, but it would really be more, the distinction would be how common it is, how often, how common such a thing happens, that then when it's more common, the chachamim are going to be mechayiv you, and when it's less common, then they will not. And then you have the opinion of the Ramban and a number of other Rishonim, we'll talk about that the distinction is it something that you did via dayim, something that you did with your own hands, versus something that you did less directly. For example, your animal going out and causing hezek or whatever. So that would be another way of understanding the difference between groma and garmi, which one you chayev for, which one you potter for. And again, the Ramban wrote a whole kuntras about this, and there's a great deal of discussion about it. So that's what I'm saying. So the Ramban discusses all of these opinions and discusses all kinds of different angles on different Gemaras. He brings in all the different Gemaras that talk about these concepts of Groma and discusses them in great detail and reconciles them with one another and talks about why in one case we say a person is Chayev and why we say in another case he's Potter and so forth. It's a Lomdusha Sefer on the subject. Mm-hmm. Okay. So anyway, so the point is, Reish Lakish is saying, yes, we hold like Reb Meir, and therefore, yes, an example where you are taking this coin and telling me this is a good coin, I should go and accept it in payment for something, and it turns out to be bad, that would be an example of Garmi, and therefore you would in fact be Chayim. That is why I'm telling you, I'm relying on you, where again, if you were an expert of the caliber of Danku and Isser, then maybe you'd be Potter. Then maybe you'd be Potter, but you're not, and therefore I'm telling you that I'm Soymach on you. And again, you have the Machlokas who's showing him, you have the Machlokas between Tosfos and the Nemuka Yosef and others. What about in the case of Danku and Isser, would they in fact be Chayiv? You say there's Soymach on them, or maybe not even then. And there was also the Machlokas before whether you're paying them or not. So there's many different possible permutations over here. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Hey, Reb Meir, which statement of Reb Meir do we see that Reb Meir holds that he holds of dinah d'garmi? Ilema Reb Meir and Dalad Laman Mem Pei Simen d'Tanan." So we're going to bring four different Mishnayos or Braises where we have an opinion that we can attribute to Reb Meir, where we see on the face of it that we have an example of dinah d'garmi, and the Gemara is going to go through them one by one. The Dalad stands for done. The Lamed stands for litzboya. The mem stands for mesakech, and the fei stands for nifritza. Okay, so ditnan. So you're going to say we have a mishnah in Masechta Bechoros that says donas adin. If a dayan judged a case, zika as a chayev chiyev as a zakai. If he mistakenly declared innocent the one who's guilty, or vice versa. So Reuven and Shimon are coming and arguing over a matter of money, and by rights the halacha should have been that Reuven is in fact chayev to pay, and instead he wrongly says that Reuven is potter from paying, or the other way around, that Reuven is supposed to be potter and he says he's chayev. Or Timi as a Tahr, Tir as a Tomei, or he mistakenly said that something that's Tahr is really Tomei, or vice versa. So Masha also Osui, what he did is done, the Shalom Mibesa, and he has to pay out of his house. The truth is actually it's not so simple. The Gemara there in Bechoros and also in Sanhedrin discusses various details and permutations in it. It depends whether he's a Mumcha L'Rabim, it depends whether Kiblu Aleihem. There's a lot of different details that it mentions over there about when he would have to pay and when not. But anyway, we're saying Masha also Osui, what he did is done, meaning we're not going to reverse the case and say, for example, in the case, let's say, where he should have said that Reuven has to pay, and instead he said that Reuven should not have to pay, we don't reverse the case and say, you know what, let's start all over, and we'll rejudge the case and find that Reuven does have to pay. We're going to leave it as is. However, now he deprived Shimon of money, therefore he's going to have to pay Shimon out of his own pocket. So now wouldn't that be a case of dinah d'garmi? Because after all, it's not a direct hezek. However you define garmi versus groma, he wasn't actually matame the food himself. He wasn't actually taking money out of Shimon's pocket and putting it into Reuven's or whatever. And yet we're being mechayev him to pay. And since this is a stam mishnah to mayor, so therefore that would be a proof maybe that a mayor holds that of dinah d'garmi. But the Gemara says no. No, it would actually only apply these dinim only if he actually took it with his hand. So what does that mean? So Rashi gives examples. Let's say, for example, the case of Zikr as a Chayev, the case where he declared somebody innocent of paying, where really he's Chayev, would be, for example, let's say you have Reuven and Shimon. You have Reuven is claiming that he lent money to Shimon. And Shimon is not paying up and he's going to Beis Din. And so let's say, for example, the Dayan. So now let's say, for example, the Dayan says that you Reuven have a mashkin in your hand, which belongs to Shimon, and you're saying that Shimon owes you the money. But in fact, I'm passing that Shimon is potter from paying you the money. Therefore, I'm going to actually take the mashkin out of your hand and give it to Shimon. So that's literally nosav nosav miyad. He literally took money and he took an object of value out of Reuven and gave it to Shimon. And then it turns out he had made a mistake in halacha. So therefore it's not groma, and therefore it's not garmi anymore. Therefore he directly caused a hezek. Chiyav as hazaka would be the other way around. He took the money from the one person and gave it to the other. Rashi explains, let's say, for example, so they came to him with a shaila, whether a certain food, let's say truma, for example, is tahor. And then what he actually did, Rashi describes, let's say he declared it's tame, and then to confirm confirm that. He said, you want to, you know, I'm saying it's tummy, and I'm so certain of it, I'm going to take a dead sheddix and actually put it on that food. So if it wasn't tummy before, it's tummy now. Because of what I'm saying. He's saying that it's tummy, and he's saying it's tummy. They come to him with a shayla, this food where there was a such and such happened. So we're not sure if it, so there's no way to make food tar. You can only make a tummy. So now he mistakenly declares that this food is tummy. And now he says to the person who came with the shayla, in order to make absolutely certain that you're not going to second guess me and you're not going to go think that you can eat this food, I'm going to actually make it tummy right now. And then it turns out that he made a mistake. Tiras ha-tummy, Rashi explains, would be the other. He can't make it tummy. There's no way to make food tummy.
So once it becomes tummy.
Now, you do have a case, tiras ha-tummy, Rashi explains like this. You have a case, let's say, again, somebody came to him with a shayla about food, whether it's tummy. The dayan declared that it's tummy. And then what he actually did is, he took that food and mixed it with other fruit. So he took that tummy food and he mixed it with other food. And now when it turns out that it really was tummy, so now he caused, now all that fruit that was mixed in with now becomes tummy as well, because you can't tell which was the tummy and which was the tar. And it's a choice of us had a long discussion over here why it wouldn't be bought, why in that case we wouldn't say it's bottle, what are exact details about that, when we have that, now obviously Tosfa says you can't say Masha Osa Osui means in the case of Tumah Matara, means for example he made it tummy, it remains tummy, obviously it remains tummy, if you put a sheretz on it, it's tummy no matter what. So what it means is, in other words, that's what Tosfa says. You're right. What we mean is, Masha also Asui, whenever it's necessary to say that what he said remains so, meaning, in other words, for example, he said that this food is tummy, then we consider it tummy, even though really it turns out to be tahor. And in some cases, and we're saying in various cases, you can find, as Rashi finds over here, cases where he actually does something via dayin, and therefore that's what we're saying. It's not garmi anymore, it's an actual direct hezit. So therefore he'd be chayev. And then again, Tosfos discusses about could it even be bato beroiv? What are exactly cases where it could or couldn't be bato beroiv, etc. And Tosfos gets into a long discussion about different angles on that. The point is, so don't we see, so therefore, so here the Gemara thought that that's an example of dinah d'garmi, but we're saying that no, because here he actually did something via dayim. So therefore it's a mazik via dayim. So therefore he's chayev to pay. Okay, Ela Hora Meir. Rather, let's say maybe it's from a different din that Rav Meir says. The Tanan, we're going to learn in the next Mishnah on Amud Beis. Litzboya Loi Odom Mitzavei Shachar. A person gives wool to a dyer, telling him that he wants him to dye it red, and instead the dyer dyed it black. Shachar Mitzavei Odom, or the other way around, he wanted to dye it black and dyed it red. Rav Meir Omin Noisim Loi Dmei Tzamrei, and Rav Meir says that he has to give him the value of the wool. Now, this is an example of garmi in the sense that the wool doesn't get dyed as soon as you put it in the vat. It takes some time for it to fully absorb the color. So this would be an example of garmi, and yet Rav Meir is requiring him to pay.
Why can't I just dye it red after?
Because once it's black already, you can't dye it red. It doesn't work. It's not going to work. So don't we see that Rav Meir is machayev for garmi? And the answer is no. Again, hosam ka'ovid biyadayim, because no, we're talking about, as we learned actually previously in the Gemara, and we learned yesterday on Tzedek Testament Days, that we're talking about where he did it biyadayim, meaning he deliberately went and did the opposite of what the guy told him. He told him to dye it red. It's not that accidentally he forgot and he dyed black. We're talking about, Meir was talking about a case where he deliberately did it the wrong way, so therefore he's a mazik biyadayim. So it's not a matter of garmi. In fact, Tosfos points out that why was the Gemara even asking the question in the first place? And the answer is because the fact is it doesn't right away when you put it into the dye, it takes a couple of days for it to fully absorb it. So it should be considered like groma or garmi. And the answer is that nevertheless, the fact that he did it via dye, the fact that he actually put it in there is enough for it to be considered mazik via dye, even though it's true it takes a couple of days for the hezek to actually come out.
No.
Okay. The Gemara says, Elahara Meir. So fine, let's try another din that Rav Meir says. to Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Masech to Kilayim, Hamasakach Gafnai Agabit Vuasir Shachabere, if a person makes his vine, now we know, of course, you have the concept of Kilaya Kerem, that vine, you're not allowed to have grape vines and vegetables or grain growing too close together. And among the dinim over there that it discusses in Mishnah's Kilayim is that if a grapevine overhangs grain or vegetables, then they're going to become Vuasir. Grain, wheat, barley, whatever.
Something would be overhang.
Like overhang, in other words, the vine, the leaves, the branches, or whatever, overhang over the wheat. If a person suspends his vine over tavua of somebody else, how is a kiddush? And he makes it also as kilayim. The expression in the pasuk is pen tikta shamaleya, which is why the Mishnah uses the expression kiddush. V'chayev, and he's chayev to pay the owner of the grain. Now, this is also an example of garmi in the sense that it takes time until the grain is osur. You have the din in general with the halachas of kalaya kerem that it becomes osur only once it increased by 1/200th. The Yerushalmi explains what you do is to figure out how the reason is kalaya kerem is bottled in 200. So here, where you have that. If you have a fruit of Kalaya Kerem or a grain of Kalaya Kerem that got mixed up with 200 times as much of normal, then it's bottled. So now, in the same vein, therefore, if you have that, you have, for example, grain that's growing there, and it increased less than 1/200th, the increase which happened while it's under the grapevine is going to be nisbatal on the rest. But once it reaches 1/200th, then it's going to be osir. The Yerushalmi explains the way you figure it out is you take, for let's say, for example, the grain. Once you harvest the grain, you figure out how long does it take it to dry out completely. So then there's to the point where there's no trace of water left in it. Then at that point, you figure, let's say, for example, it takes 100 hours for it to dry out. Then that means that the growing, it also takes 100 hours. Now, it takes months for grain to grow. But the point is, there's times when it's growing and times when it's not. During the day, there's going to be times when it's actually growing and increasing in size and times when it's not. So now, therefore, the Yerushalmi says, you figure it in the same way. If it takes 100 hours to dry out, it means it took 100 hours to grow to this size in the first place. That's what the Yerushalmi assumes. It's the same thing. Therefore, so in that case, 1/200th would be a half hour. So therefore, if a half hour passed with it being under the grapevine, then it's going to be also. So now...
But you're saying every time something grain grows, it's different.
What the Yerushalmi is saying is, you figure it like this. It's true that from when you plant the grain until you harvest it is several months. Mm-hmm. But you have, during that time, not always is the grain growing.
You're saying actually sometimes growing?
Actually growing. You have only during the day when you have photosynthesis going on and you have sunlight on it. Mm-hmm. Maybe even not even all times during the day, whatever. The point is, the Yerushalmi calculates it that way. That's how you do. You figure how long it takes to dry out. That's the same amount of time that during the growth phase of it was the actual amount of time it spent growing, and then you divide that by 200.
You know, so you could just see, you don't have to calculate, you could see how long it takes to dry, no?
You look how long it takes to dry out. Then you take that amount and you do that.
Okay,
so in this case, in other words, so the Mishnah is saying that here you have a case of Gaumi, because the moment he puts the grapevine over it, it doesn't directly become ulcer. Only later on when it grows, that would be an example of Gaumi. And still the mayor is Machayavim. Again, being a Stam Mishnah, then we assume it's according to the mayor. And the answer is no. Hosam Nami Kovid Biadayim. The fact is, he is doing it Biadayim. He is taking the grapevine and spreading it over the grain at that point, and that's enough, as Tosfos points out. Even though it's true that only later on is it going to have the effect, nevertheless, the fact that he did something Biadayim in the first place is enough for it not to be considered Garmi. So there's no solid proof from there that a mayor holds of Dinah de Garmi. Rather, we can say that it's the following statement of Rameir. The Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. Now this Braisa also has to do with Kalaya Kerem. But this one, now a Stam Mishnah Rameir, a Stam Braisa is not necessarily Rameir. However, Tosfos points out that the assumption in this Braisa is going to be, as it was in previous Mishnah, that Reuven is able to assur Shimon's grain by having his grapevine over it. Now the Mishnah mentions over there in Kilayim, after this dinner, the Gemara brings several other Tanoim, Rab Yossi and Rab Shimon, who say no, a person cannot assur something that belongs to him. According to them, if Reuven's grapevines are overhanging Shimon's tavua, Rab Yossi and Rab Shimon are going to hold, Shimon's tavua is not going to become osur, because it's not his to make osur. So then, if Rab Meir, if we're saying in the previous, in the Mishnah, So therefore, so that's what comes out. Therefore, this braisa, which is going to assume that it becomes ulcer, can only be according to the mayor. That's what Tosfos points out. Generally, stam mishnah of mayor, unless we have a proof otherwise. Yeah. Yeah. So the Tanya, we learn in a braisa, mechitzas hakerem shenifritza. If you have a wall or fence around a vineyard, and now a hole and now a breach developed in it. Now, the din is, usually you have to have, there has to be a certain minimum distance between grain or vegetables and grapevines. The usual amount is, if it's a whole vineyard, then 4 amas, and if it's only an individual grapevine, then you need only 6 tfachim. But if you have a fence in between, or even sometimes you have things that can be considered a fence in halacha, even though they're not physically a fence. So does a Pesach, for example. Whatever, different kinds of things. The din is, then you're allowed to have grain right near the grapevines because you have this fence or the sort of a Pesach or whatever separating. So now you have mechitzas akerem. You have this partition between the vineyard and the grain shenifritza that was broken open. So now you have a hole in it. Now you have a problem. You know, the grain is not far away enough from the grapevines. Oimer loigder. So the owner of the tevua says to the owner of the grapevines, fence it in. Meaning, because I don't want my grain. I don't want my grain to be also. I don't want that. In the example we just gave, if it stays like that for half an hour, it's going to be, and my grain is going to become also, and I don't want it to. So fence it in. Now, why he has to say? Oh, no. So wait, we'll talk about why. The owner of the grain, Shimon, the owner of the grain, is telling Reuven, the owner of the grapevines, fence it in so that your grapevines are not gonna harm my tevuah and make it awesome.
What do you mean his
tevuah? His grain is growing. Shimon has grain growing on the other side of the fence, and now the fence broke. So Tosfos points out actually why can't the owner of the grapevine say the other way around? You don't want your tevuah to become also, you fence it in. Tosfos explains that actually the reason is, the whole reason why you need 4 amas between them is because you need space to work the vineyard. You need room to be able to bring in a plow, for example, over there, to plow around them and to do other field work around them. And that's why those 4 amas are considered to belong to the vineyard. So now, when the fence has been, so now as long as there was a fence, then there was a fence. Good. But now that there isn't, then the owner of the tevuah has the right to say to the owner of the fence, to the owner of the vineyard, the fact is, the 4 amas that were needed over here are for the sake of your vineyard, so you better put it back up that fence. Otherwise, because of the 4 amas that your vineyard requires, is why my grain is going to become usur, and I don't want that to happen.
Isn't that only if the same owner owns both parts?
According to Rav Yossi and Rav Shimon, Einonim Oisa Dovah Shein Shaloi. But according to Rav Meir, and we're saying this Braisa necessarily is according to Rav Meir, then no. Rav Meir had said in the previous one, in the Mishnah that we just quoted before, Rav Meir had said that if Reuven's grapevines are overhanging Shimon's grain, then Shimon's grain is going to become ulcer. His grapevine may also become also, but fine. He may figure I can tolerate the loss, but whatever. Whatever the point is, he doesn't care. But anyway, the point is, so yes, the mayor would hold that it can work across different owners. Rav Yossi and Rav Shimon would disagree, but this braisa, we're talking according to the mayor. Anyway, so that's why Tosfos explains that's why we're expecting that the Bala Kerem, the owner of the vineyard, is going to be the one who fences it in, because really the 4 amas are required because of his grapevines, not so much because of the grain, right?
Because I'm curious, what's going on with your name?
What?
What's going on that we think it's our name?
No, so far we're saying we're trying to prove that a mayor holds a dinner de garmi So in fact, actually, one of the things that Amban points out in this Kuntras Dinah D'Garmi is over here, he says that after all, he says, the fact is, right now, it's causing a hezek. It would be the equivalent, he says, like if you have a shur that you don't lock up and you don't go and watch it, you don't call that groma, you're chayiv for your shur. Why shouldn't he be chayiv here for his grapevines? He says, because the fact is, if we were to say that it's an actual hezek, then the fact is it would be a hezek chain and nicker. He wouldn't be chayev daradais anyway. At most, he'd be chayev darabanan. So therefore, so uh, So therefore, no, it's more because that's the thing. It is a grama, but it's a kind of grama which can be classified as garmi, however we define grama versus garmi, as we said before, and therefore he can be chayim. He also brings an explanation from the Bala Tosfos Tosfos explains over here another point as well. Why does the expression Omer Loigdur? Why is it saying he tells him to fence it in? Why does the Braisa just say Chayev Ligdur? He's Chayev to fence it in. And so the answer is, so the Re explains, because if you don't tell him to fence it in, then he's in fact not Chayev. Because he's going to figure that he's not going to be chayav b'achru yosai unless you tell him to fence it in. So there, unless you tell him, therefore he's going to be potter. And an additional point is also that the Ramban also adds a point also in the name of the Ri. Really, what it is when you get down to it, it's not actually, as we're going to see in the continuation of the Braisa, it's not so much the breach that makes the Isser, it's the Nisyaish, when he gives up and says, I'm not going to bother fencing in anymore. Now you have, Tosfos brings actually in this connection of a din that the Mishnayos tell over there. You can have an example. The Mishnah gives an example. A person is going in his vineyard and he notices vegetables growing over there. If he says, fine, I'm too far away from it to reach right now. As I go through the vineyard, eventually I'll get to it, then I'll pull it out. Then that's fine, even if it takes a while for him to get there, even if it takes, let's say, more than the half hour that we said before. However, on the other hand, if he says, I have to leave now, but when I come back, Then, so that would be an example. He's misyayish, he's giving up on it right now. And then if that half hour passes, then there's a problem. Similarly, then Tosfos mentions, and the Ramban brings it in this connection, in Dinah Degarmi, that the real thing, it's not so much the breach that creates the problem, it's the yish that creates the problem. Therefore, that's why we have to have Oymer Loi. We tell him, because without that, you don't have that yish. Without that, he doesn't even know it broke down. And therefore, how can you say that it's also in the first place? So that's why the expression is Oymer Loi Gdur. You tell him to fence it in. Nifritza, if again it breaks down, then again the other guy tells him to fix it. And again, Tosfos discusses, why would he have to tell him twice? So actually the Re wonders, is it that you need to literally tell him every time, or is it enough two times? And then he brings from Rabbi Natam that says that the reason is why it mentions two times. Let's say the first time, in our example, where you have a half hour, let's say the first time from when he found out until he fenced it in was 15 minutes. The second time was another 15 minutes. Do those combine together? So now we have a total of a half hour where it was Be'isr? No. Tosfos says, Rabbi Natam says, that's why we're saying twice, Omer, implying one is not combining with the other one because it becomes Botr. The first time, what it grew in 15 minutes, is less than 1/200. Therefore, it's bottle, and it doesn't combine with what comes from the second time. And Tosfos gets into a further discussion about details about that. When sometimes we say with Sodom Choyza Benir, sometimes we say it wakes up again and is Mitzadef. Sometimes we don't. Tosfos says this would be one of the examples where it doesn't. Anyway, the Braisa continues, Nisyayeshem Mimena, if he gives up on it, Veloy Godra, and he doesn't fence it in, Hareza Kiddush, then the result is he makes the Teruah also of Kilayim, v'chayev b'achru yosai, and he's chayev to pay for it. This is an example of Garmi. And in fact, Tosfos says it's not even considered hezek she'enin nikur. Now we just said that Ramban points out that if it was a regular hezek, it would be hezek she'enin nikur. Tosfos says actually no, it is considered a hezek nikur. It's true you can't tell the difference, of course, between grain that was grown be'isser and grain that was grown beheter. But you can see over here the grapevines near the grain, and that's enough for it to be considered nikur.
But it's not just put like a string around.
If he puts a string, then that's fine. But if he doesn't, it's yash. Then we're saying b'chayev b'achru yosai. So he's chayev. There you have an example. This is a true example of Dinah Degarmi, and we see that Meir is Machayev him. So therefore, we have a perfect example where we see that a Meir does hold of Dinah Degarmi. And therefore, so that bears out what Rish Lakish was saying, that Reb Meir holds of Dinah Degarmi, and we do in fact, Rish Lakish had said, we do in fact pass him like him, and that is in fact how it is. Okay. Mishnah says, let's learn the Mishnah and a little bit of the Gemara on it, Hanoisin Semer Latzaba. If a person gives wool to a dyer, the vat where the dye is burnt it. So in other words, he overcooked the dye, and therefore the result is that the wool that he put into there to absorb the color got wool. Noisin, then he has to pay him the value of the wool. here you can't talk about. Now, further in the Mishnah, we're going to talk about what happens. Sometimes he pays him the shvach and the hoitzah and different kinds of things. Here you can't talk about that because there's nothing. The wool was completely burnt, so therefore there's nothing to talk about. He has to pay him for the wool, and that's that. What about another case? Tzavoy ko'er. What about if he dyed it an ugly shade? As the word ko'er, as it actually points out, with an aleph is like ko'er with an ayin, which means ugly. And we're going to explain in the Gemara what it means. So therefore,
not like light.
No, ko'er with an ayin and ko'er with an aleph both mean ugly. In fact, it's interesting. You have the word l'cho'ura. You have in only one single place in Shas. There's a Gemara in Ksubas that has the word l'cho'ura. And one explanation, in fact, is it means like when you look at it, if you give it an ugly look, like if you give it a too shitchy stick a look, a too surface look. So we use l'chorah to mean on the face of it. But in fact, the Aruch over there explains that it's related to this word ko'er over here. Means if you give it an ugly look, if you don't fatifzich in it the way you're supposed to, if you just look at it in a shitchy stick away. Anyway, so the point is here he dyed it, but he dyed it an ugly color. Meaning, in other words, as the Gemara is going to say it, like it came out, it should be a uniform color, and instead it's not. Instead, it's like some places are darker than others. The Gemara will explain what it means. So then we say like this, Ima shvach yoser al yitzia. So now it depends. If the improvement in the value of the wool is greater than the expenses, then the owner of the wool only has to pay him for the expense. And if the expense is greater than the shvach, then he only has to pay him for the shvach. So the lesser of either one. Now, on the face of it, shvach and yitzia mean exactly what we said. In other words, that either there's the amount that he expected it to improve, and then there's the amount that he put into it. So now Mao Shaw points out, I mean, on the face of it, you have to ask. I mean, we're obviously you're going to expect. So Rashi uses the expression over here. Also, Rashi makes a point. He says in the last case of the Mishnah, where you also have this expression, Yitzia and Shvach, in Rabbi Huda's opinion, in the last case of the Mishnah. So Rashi uses the expression, if the Yitzia, if the expenses is greater than the Shvach, then he pays him for the Shvach. And if he wants to instead pay him, for example, the Shvach is greater than the schar, then instead he'll give him his schar, his payment. Moshe points out, I mean, come on, you know, if a guy is a competent businessman, he's not going to spend more than what he's going to get paid for it. You can't run a business that way. So Mao Shaw explains, in other words, you could have, for example, now Rashi doesn't mention that in the previous case. He only mentions it in the next case involving, which we learned before, about if he's supposed to dye it red, he dyed it black, or the other way around. So there you could have, for example, Mao Shaw explains, you could have, let's say, that he was supposed to dye it red. Instead, he dyed it black, and he figured the other guy is going to end up paying him more for that because he wanted red wool. It's true, but now that he gets good black wool, maybe he'll be willing to pay more for it. So that would be a kind of case.
Why should he pay more? He said something.
Because he said he wanted red, but after all, he said the guy is thinking he's sober. That's what Mao Shaw says. Sober should use but sober shachar. He thinks that maybe he'll pay him more.
But still, it's been a mistake.
Yeah, it wasn't a mistake. We learned before that he did deliberately that way, but whatever. Anyway, the point is Rashi explains that later on, but Tosfos actually brings a whole different explanation from the Yerushalmi that explains Yitzia and Shvach differently. Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that gives as follows. Tosfos gives an example. Suppose, for example, you have the wool is worth five, the dye is worth five, the amount that he was the extra value that it was supposed to be is let's talk about that in connection with the next case of the Mishnah, because actually that's where Tosfos brings it. So here we're saying fine, he pays him for the Yitzia or the Shvach, whichever one is less. Yitzia is the expenses,
and the Shvach is the
improvement in value. So like this, in other words, he dyed it with the dye, with the color dye that he was supposed to. But as the Gemara says, he was careless and he used the dye at the bottom of the vat, which is a bad quality. It's like the dregs of the dye. Right. So therefore, he did it deliberately wrong, and therefore, so then he pays. So then the owner pays him the yitzia or the shvach, whichever is less. Yeah. Then you have a third case. Let's buy a odin with sabay shachar. What if the balabas told him to dye it red and he dyed it black? Or shachar with sabay odin, or the other way around, he's supposed to dye it black and dye it red. Rav Meir omer noisim ledmeit samrei. Rav Meir says he pays him for the value of the wool. Meaning, in other words, that a mayor says, we learned about this all the way at the beginning of the parak. We talked about that a mayor considers him to be a form of gazlan. So and we said therefore he's koneh with a shinui. Tosfos said so he's koneh with a shinui. So Tosfos said that there's a couple of different ways of understanding exactly what Reb Meir means. Do we mean that, so let's see. So Tosfos had pointed out that one way of understanding Reb Meir's opinion would be that so here Tosfos had said there's two possibilities. Tosfos has explained Rabbi Yehuda over there rather. Was Reb Meir fine? Reb Meir is saying that we consider him to be a gazlan, so he was koneh b'shinui. Therefore, like we learned earlier in the perek, mishalom k'shas hagzela, so he pays the value of the wool as it was worth when it was given to him, and he keeps this wool. Rabbi Yehuda says that no, you do the same as in the previous case. Mashvach yosral etzia noisem leisetzia. If the improvement in the value of the wool is greater than the expense that he put into it, noisem leisetzia, then the balabos pays him only for the etzia, only for the expense. Leimaitzia he say ala shvach. And if the expense is greater than the shvach, noisem leis shvach, then he only has to pay him the shvach. Here's where Tosfos says that there's two ways. Rabbi Yehuda might hold that the shinui is not kona at all, midaraisa, and here we have it's only takonas ashavim. The chum want to make it easier for him to do tshuva, or is it that, and especially when he didn't mean to do, especially when he didn't mean to do wrong necessarily, or rather the other way around. Here, normally you would say takonas hachamim of takonas hashavim in order to make it easier for people to do tshuva. But here, where it wasn't a gazlan, here it was where he did wrong, then we wouldn't necessarily say that takana. Or the other way of looking at it is that Rabbi Yehuda would agree that a shinui is koneh min haTorah, but since he didn't intend to acquire it with this shinui, then therefore he's not acquiring it, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda says he gives it back to the balabos, and the balabos pays him the lesser of the two, either the shvach or the yitzia. So again, here's where Rashi says that if he wants to only pay him the schar, meaning that the shvach was greater than the schar, then he'll do that. And here's where Maharsha says, well, what was the guy thinking in the first place, that the schar was going to be less than the shvach? You can't do business that way. And so he explains that Rashi is means over here, that let's say, for example, the Uman, the dyer thought, you know what, it's true he told me to do black, he told me to do red, I did black instead, but you know what, I have a feeling he'll actually want black after all, and he'll be willing to pay me even more than that. So now we're saying it doesn't work out, and he ends up getting paid only for the original amount they had contracted for. Anyway, Tosfos brings a whole different explanation from the Yerushalmi over here of what we mean by Yitzia and Shvach. So it's like this. Tosfos describes from the Yerushalmi, either the wool is worth 5, the dye is worth another 5, then there's, so far we're 10, then there was going to be how much he was going to pay him, he was going to pay him 10. Then he tells him like this, he tells him to dye it red. Instead, the guy dyed it black. He says, listen, if you had dyed it red, it would have been worth 25. Now it's worth only 20. In other words, the point is, my expectation was that the result of you dying it is actually going to be that I'm going to have an increase of 5 over everything that went into it. There's 5 of wool, 5 of dye, 10 of pay, and I would have had 25. So in other words, I would have expected to get an extra 5 out of it. Like this, you gave me something which is worth only 20. The result is, therefore, Tosfos says that Yerushalmi learns that I should get my extra 5 regardless. I'm entitled to my extra 5 regardless, and that means I'm going to deduct from the amount that I have to pay you. Instead of paying you 10, I'm going to pay you only 5. So that way I put in 10 of raw materials, 5 for the wool, 5 for the dye. I'm only paying you 5 for your work. Now I have wool, which is worth 20, so I'll still make my $5 profit. That's how the Yerushalmi learns Shvach and Hitzal respectively.
Why is the different color in it?
Because you could have people want to buy more of one color than in the other. So that's how it comes out. Then Tosfos discusses Then Tosfos discusses various possibilities of what the Yerushalmi means by that, and a couple of possible ways of explaining. So the Gemara asks, "My kor." What is this expression "kor" in the Mishnah meant? So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bamachona, kalbus. It means that he klabus, whatever. It means that he dyed it in a way which is called kalbus. My kalbus. In turn, what does that mean? Amar Rav Bashmo, hafra dudi. It means he used it to wipe out, he used only the dye that's wiped out from the bottom of the vat. In other words, that instead of using the good dye from the body of the dye that's in the vat, he used just the dregs of it that are at the bottom. The word kalbus, various Rishonim explain. Now, usually you have the word kalbus is used in other places in Shas to mean something like a piece of metal with sharp or hooked edges. So here what it is therefore it comes to mean kind of like a zigzag or like something that there's something like it's like irregular in shape or in color. So here basically what it means, the Shita Kubetza springs from a Shuta Gaon, that basically it means that it came out patchy. That it means, in other words, instead of it being a solid black or a solid red or whatever you have, it's like patchy. Some parts are darker, some parts are lighter, and therefore it doesn't look so good. And therefore, that's the example. Now, that would be unlike in the case of Odin Mitzvah Shachar, where we had a machlokus about that. When he does it kor, there's no question he acted carelessly by using that inferior dye at the bottom of the vat. And therefore, the result is that he only gets the shvach or the hutzah, whichever is less.
In this case, why is he called Rabbi Bar Chana?
Rabbi Bar Chana, he's called that. Some say that his father's name was Bar Chana. Some say that because he's the grandfather of Chana. Yeah, well, either way.
Is it possible because also he passed away?
No, not necessarily. I don't know about that. Okay, so that's what it means. So that's the situation then. So that's the situation where he died. The second case of the Mishnah. So again, we have three cases in the Mishnah. One where he burnt the wool altogether. Then there's no question he pays the value of the wool. Then you can't talk about shvach and hitzah, because as it actually said, there is no shvach and hitzah to talk about. All you have is the wool itself is burnt. Second of all, you have where he dyed it, but he dyed it using the dye at the bottom of the vat. So now we're saying he only gets the shvach or the hitzah, whichever is less. Then you have the third case where he dyed it the wrong color, and there you have the machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, where Rabbi Meir says he's a gazlan and just owns the wool now, and he has to pay the value of the wool, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying shvach and yitzia, etc., which we'll talk about that point. We'll talk about that point about shvach and yitzia in connection with that, and in connection with other cases where a person is supposed to do something for you and messes up. We'll learn about that tomorrow, Beis Hashem.